Sally Steenland, and I direct the Faith and Progressive Policy Team here at the Center for American Progress. And with me today are two special guests, Asifa Qureshi, Assistant Professor of Law at the University of Wisconsin and Fellow at the Institute for Social Policy and Understanding, and Dr. Reverend Welton Gaddy, President of Interfaith Alliance and host of the radio show State of Belief. We're going to talk today about Sharia, what it is and what it isn't. And Asifa, I'd like to start with you, and let me just ask you that question. For folks who may think they know a little bit about Sharia or really have never heard of the word before, what is Sharia and what isn't it?
For Muslims, Sharia is the way that they believe God wants us to live in the world. One would look to the particular source of the understanding of what God wants us to do and would follow that way. Sharia literally actually means way or street. So Sharia would be the way or the path a Muslim would want to follow. What God wants us to do is living our lives in a spiritual way. What often gets mixed up and misunderstood are the particular details of laws that would govern an individual Muslim's life. So people have heard of a particular Islamic law, they'll call it Sharia, that might be in some way disagreeing with some particular values of gender equality or human rights. That's usually where the concerns come up in the West. And I want to emphasize that the particular details, most of those are interpretations or understanding of that way. The word that's used to describe those interpretations or legal rules is actually the word fiqh, which literally means understanding. So if you've heard a particular rule for adultery or a particular rule for the basis of how one Muslim might be able to get divorced, you're talking about fiqh. You're talking about individual interpretations by religious scholars of what Sharia, God's way, should be in people's lives. And the history of Islamic law has been a multiplicity of fiqh interpretations, and it's still alive and well, and many new interpretations are coming out all the time. Some of the classical and new interpretations might disagree with some of the modern norms in the world, in the West, and others not. And it's important to understand the diversity that is really an attribute of Islamic law and not get caught up that it's some kind of rigid code that is unquestionable.
Welton, let me ask you a question about Sharia and comparing it and contrasting it with other faith traditions, say Christianity or Judaism, teachings, practice, and civil law as well. Can you clear some of that up for us?
I can certainly try. I'll either clear it up or make people more confused. The operative word here is law, and that is a problematic term if you think of law in the sense of what a legislature does in our country or what Congress does, and you impose that view of law on religious law. That's not what religious law is. You've just heard, in fact, a great example, a model description of what religious law is. The purpose of religious law is to help people know how to show their devotion to God, to be obedient to the God they worship. The suggestions, the guidelines, the imperatives that we are referring to as law are not divine in origin. They are constructed by people, religious leaders, who have as their intent helping people know how to live a religious life. Now, already we see the differences, because civil law is something enacted by a governmental body. Its purpose is to have an organized community in which people don't run through traffic lights and you have some order involved. Civil law has a recrimination if you break it. There are fines, there are levels of punishment, there can even be incarceration, and I'm sad to say, in sometimes now in the United States, it can even be death. The hurt, and I'm using hurt as an emotional word, not a legal word, that comes from breaking religious law is I'm failing in my devotion to God. I'm not doing what God expects of me. I'm not growing as a person of faith. Now, those are two very different definitions. So why is religious law, Sharia to be specific, feared in the United States? It is because in history we have seen periods where Sharia in Islam like the Levitical codes in Judaism, have actually been merged to a certain extent with civil law in various places around the globe. If you go to Israel today, you'll see that some of the Levitical codes in the Torah have actually been made civil laws in Israel. You don't have the same problem within Christianity because in its formative years, Christians were in a minority and didn't have the opportunity to write so-called Christian laws. We've seen since then that when Christians have an opportunity to do that, they go at it very vigorously and evangelistically. So we've had Christian amendments to the Constitution. We've had laws at least proposed that would tell people on what day they can worship, on what day they can work. And one other comment. Religious law is distinctly different from civil law. And the confusion between the two is not accidental. There are people in our nation who are working to confuse people in order to make people afraid of Sharia and thus to fear Islam because they think, these people think, they can advance their particular political agenda by doing that. The Constitution of the United States is in absolutely no danger of being trumped by anybody's religious law.
Thanks, Welton. That's an important thing to remember. And a final question just for both of you is if there were one thing you wanted people to take away in terms of Sharia, what's the one thing you would want them to remember? And then also because it is being used as such a wedge issue these days, what's the one thing to be on the lookout for? So in other words, if you hear these words or these terms, a red flag should go up in your mind.
Well, I always tell my law students that if you hear a sentence like Sharia says X or Islam says X, you should probably realize you're not getting the whole story. And that is because Islamic law itself has always been extremely pluralistic. I mentioned those interpretive schools. There's many schools of Islamic law. All of them are trying to articulate Sharia, God's way, for the people. But the healthy diversity of Islamic law has always existed and continues to exist today. So what I'd like people to take away is an appreciation that, A, they're probably not getting the whole story, and B, there might be part of that story that they're not hearing that they might actually agree with.
Let me just say, I think what's at stake here is the continuation of religious freedom as we've known it in this nation. It's never secure. It always has to be argued for. And the basic principle is if there is hostility toward one religion in this nation, there's hostility toward all religions in this nation. And you cannot say that Muslims can't try to follow the path they understand to God without putting in jeopardy whatever path you hold about getting to God. That means we have to be vigilant with religious freedom support, and it means in an election year we have to be extremely sensitive to why politicians are saying what they're saying, because nothing less there is at stake than democracy as we know it.
Thank you very much. These are words worth remembering, and thanks for being with us today.
Thank you.
You know, what you just said is thanks a lot. Mm-hmm.